Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Welcome to the Simple Sophisticate Podcast, where intelligent living is paired with signature style. I'm your host, Shannon Abels. And whether you're listening on your commute, exercising, working in the garden, or sitting down with a hot cup of tea or a cafe au lait, thank you for tuning in. Let's get started. Welcome to the 245th episode of The Simple Sophisticate. Today we're going to talk about resilience, as I mentioned in yesterday's Instagram post, as well as on the weekly newsletter where I give a heads up as to what the new episode will be coming on Monday. Resilience is often something that we hear when times are tough. But here's the awesome news. When we have resilience in our good days, we actually make those tough moments that much easier to get through. But that might sound initially contradictory. How does that work? What do you mean? How is that possible? Why do I need resilience in my good days and my okay days? My days are going fine. Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'm going to share 10 ways resilience during good times can elevate your everydays. But before I get into that, this week's Petit Plaisir is a film that I absolutely loved and was inspired by. I found myself crying tears of joy and appreciation. Anyway, I'll get to that at the end of today's episode, so stay tuned. It's still in the theaters, and so you can still go see it if it's something that's going to interest you. But let's get into today's topic, resilience. Today's episode is inspired by a book titled Resilient, How to Grow an Unshakable Core of Calm, Strength, and Happiness by Rick Hansen, Dr. Rick Hansen. And it came out last year with great reviews. And I want to begin with a quote from the book. Resilience is more than bouncing back from adversity. People who are resilient keep pursuing their goals in the face of challenges. Consequently, learning how to regulate your brain's motivational machinery is a key aspect of resilience. Living well and successfully, reaching our fullest potential, in part, resides in understanding what is and is not in our control. Once we understand what we have control over, for example, and for today's episode's purposes, the mind, when we understand what we have control over, and that would be our mind, then we need to be willing to take the time to learn how it functions and how we can use its talents to enhance the overall quality of our lives. Dr. Rick Hansen shares in the introduction of his book, Resilience, that, quote, "The brain is continually remodeling itself as you learn from your experiences. When you repeatedly stimulate a circuit in your brain, you strengthen it," end quote. After reading his book, which is organized by the needs we have as human beings, safety, satisfaction, and connection, readers will discover the skills and then the tools to build those skills to build their resilience. Quote, "True resilience fosters well-being, an underlying sense of happiness, love, and peace," end quote. And in order to foster the sense of each of these and hardwire them into our being, we need to experience them. We need to seek them out and consciously savor them so as to remember how to live each day consciously as we build a life we love living each day. Hansen asserts, and I have to certainly agree, when we practice and improve our resilience in good times or seemingly benign moments in our everyday lives, we, quote, "will feel less anxiety and irritation, less disappointment and frustration, and less loneliness, hurt, and resentment. And when the waves of life come at you, you'll meet them with more peace, contentment, and love in the core of your being," end quote. So let's get into this list by looking at our everyday lives and discovering how we can strengthen the muscle, the skill that is resilience as we go through them. Number one, take care of your own well-being first. Here's a quote from the book. Being good to yourself is good for others. When people increase their own well-being, they usually become more patient, cooperative, and caring in their relationships. We can only give our best selves when we care for ourselves well. When our needs are met, we can then help others who are in need of generosity, understanding, and patience. And you may remember earlier this year, episode 242, I shared 31 ways to practice true self-care. So if you want to dive into how to take care of yourself and your own well-being, check out episode 242. So that's number one. And we can do that, this taking care of our well-being every single day. Number two, notice and savor enjoyable moments. I love this one because it involves things that we want to do as well as things we don't want to do, but we can turn those things into awesome opportunities to find enjoyable moments within them. So creating the habit of being self-compassionate is a learned skill. And with any skill, it takes conscious effort and repetition to habituate the skill into our default systems. Hansen advises, quote, "Once you're having an enjoyable experience, feel it as fully as possible and take a little time, a breath or two or 10, to stay with it. The more often you do this, the more you will tend to hardwire psychological resources for yourself," end quote. So once you have strengthened the skill of noticing enjoyable moments, slowing down to recognize them and fully appreciate them, and savoring them, you will be better able to utilize this observational skill during those difficult times as well as the joyous times, which in doing so makes those not so fun times more enjoyable. So number two is enjoy and savor enjoyable moments. Number three, welcome enjoyable moments into each day. So this is kind of building off the last one. So conscious living is thoughtful living, to pay a close attention to how our days are constructed. Now, this doesn't mean we have to plan every minute of the day, and it doesn't mean everything must be nose to the grindstone work or striving for nothing but perfection. What Hansen encourages is to understand and find what is enjoyable about the tasks we both want to do and have to do. Completing a project at work, for example, while the entire task may not be enjoyable, ask yourself what is enjoyable and focus on that. In doing so, you are more engaged, more attentive, and more likely to give your best and have a more positive outcome. On the flip side, for those activities you enjoy, make sure you partake in them regularly and savor the enjoyment you derive from doing so. Each time you focus on the reward, the enjoyable part, the brain releases dopamine, norepinephrine, and natural opioids, which then prioritizes in your mind what actions it wants to continue to pursue unconsciously. So essentially, you are beginning to hardwire your brain for wanting to do things that you consciously know will add quality to your life, whether the enjoyment comes from have-to tasks or want-to tasks. Now, when we say hardwiring, what we're really talking about is creating those defaults, those things that your brain does out of habit. But we want to make sure that what we've created for the defaults and the habits are things that are going to enhance the quality of our lives, not detrimental habits. So, and as we just have been talking about here, we can change the hardwiring of our mind. But again, when we say hardwiring, we mean creating those defaults. So that's number three, welcome enjoyable moments into each day. Number four, repeat the superpowers you want to be part of your brain's hardwiring. A quote from the book, "The more neurons fire together, the more they wire together. In essence, you develop psychological resources by having sustained and repeated experiences of them that are turned into durable changes in your brain," end quote. Hansen shares that our character strengths, mood, skillful ways, outlook, good habits, etc., are predominantly learned, as only one-third are innate in our DNA. The remaining two-thirds are acquired through learning. This is good news, but it also means we have a massive responsibility that we are who we either consciously or unconsciously choose to become, as Hansen coins, who we learn to be. So number four is repeat the superpowers you want to be part of your brain's hardwiring. Number five, encourage beneficial experiences. Quote, "See the jewels around you," end quote. The brain's negativity bias is programmed to protect us, and so it will bring to the forefront if we are not the master of our minds, all the negative in our days. However, when we understand why the brain is doing this, we can counteract it, seeking out, observing, and savoring and incorporating more positive little moments into our day. From savoring your breakfast or that cold glass of water after a long walk, observing the beauty of the day or the happy step of your pup as you head out for your walk, when we pay attention to the good experiences, we are nurturing our well-being. Why? Because if we are regularly letting the negative take the stage of our attention, there is, quote, wear and tear on your body and your mind. So number five is encourage beneficial experiences. Now, we're going to talk more about these beneficial experiences and seeking them out in our everydays after I introduce you to today's sponsor. So I'll be right back with the remainder of this list. Drops. Drops delivers powerful and eco-friendly cleaning products direct to your door. From laundry detergent pods to dishwasher detergent pods, they've got you covered. By selling direct to you, they avoid the middleman and offer their product for a fraction of the price offered by their competitors. Use less, save more. That's the convenience of Drops. Drops was awarded the 2017 EPA Safer Choice Partner of the Year for outstanding achievement in formulation and product manufacturing of both consumer and institutional industrial products. Drops has never tested on animals and believes in kindness, not in taking harmful shortcuts, and is entirely manufactured in the USA. They're proud to offer effective green cleaning products manufactured right here in the United States. They believe in supporting local jobs, communities, small businesses, and fair wages. Add a dose of aromatherapy to your laundry with Drops detergents, lightly scented with essential oils and botanical extracts. And this is what I sincerely enjoyed about having and using the Drops pods for my laundry. When I'm washing my sheets, especially, I've used the lavender drops, and it just adds a nice little touch of freshness to the sheets. And then I will air dry my sheets as I do for my linen sheets. But this is something that not only does the job that we want it to do, clean our laundry, but also makes us feel good about contributing positively and thoughtfully. Now, as a simple, sophisticated listener, Drops is offering an extra 30% off your first order. Simply visit Drops, that's drops.com/simple30. That's drops.com/simple30, and then enter simple30 to get an extra 30% off your first order of convenient, plastic-free, eco-friendly cleaning. Every drop counts. Again, that's drops.com/simple30. And don't forget to use the promo code simple30. As we get back into our list, number six, I think, is probably the fundamental one to understand in so many different aspects of our lives. And it's all about learning. Number six, understand the essence of what learning is. What we learn, we become. And since 2/3 of who we become is learned, knowing how to learn is essential. So we can do it well and then learn what will improve the quality of our everydays and overall lives. Hansen's acronym for learning is HEAL, H-E-A-L. H, have a beneficial experience, then E, enrich that experience, then A, absorb it, and finally, L, link it to replace or soothe painful material. The first three steps are the essence of learning. Have a beneficial experience, enrich it, then absorb it. With that said, we need to live consciously. We need to choose experiences that are beneficial or have the potential to be beneficial. To enrich each of these beneficial experiences, we need to be fully present, taking everything in, slowing down, looking for something we had not seen if we are experiencing something beyond the first time, and then become clear as to why the experience is valuable to us. Now, I am simply summarizing how to work through this learning essence, the HEAL acronym, but if you go to page 58 in the book, he gives a detailed layout of how each of these steps can be done. Now, once you have enriched the learning, so you're through having the experience and then enriching it, you then need to savor the experience or absorb it. To be clear, and Hansen points this out, and I think it's vitally important to not misunderstand, absorbing doesn't mean hanging on, clinging and not letting go. In fact, because you were never holding on to it, just noticing it, being present with the experience and appreciating it. Absorbing has to do with letting yourself feel good, letting letting yourself bask in the warmth of what has been part of your experience, and in your own way, letting it become a part of you. Experiences stay with us forever, potentially, if we want them to. So make sure the experiences that stick are ones that are truly jewels. So that's number 6. Understand the essence of learning. 7, I'm using a phrase from the book because I think it states it very, very well. And as an analogy, let the flowers pull the weeds. I love this analogy. And the neurology behind the concept demonstrates how we can rewire our mind to reframe or eliminate negative thoughts and unhelpful attitudes about life and replace them with beneficial ones. Hansen points out that practicing mindfulness will be a helpful tool to be able to grow flowers whilst bringing as well to our attention the weed you want to replace. Because when you are able to hold two thoughts simultaneously in your mind, it is then that the good can begin to replace the negative, as you are able to recognize that good that is true and begin to chip away at what is no longer serving you. So number 7 is let the flowers pull the weeds. Number 8, be mindful of the self-critic and strengthen the inner nurturer. Here is a quote from the book. There are two different attitudes or voices inside us all, one that is nurturing and another that is critical, one that lifts up and one that weighs down. This is perfectly normal. The inner nurturer brings self-compassion and encouragement. The inner critic helps you recognize when you've done wrong and what you need to do to set things right. For most people, the inner critic goes way overboard. It's big and powerful, while the inner nurturer is small and ineffective, which wears down mood, self-worth, and resilience. End quote. The inner critic needs to be kept in check, and this can be hard to do when moments in life, people in our lives, become frustrating or hard to work with. We can be excessively harsh on ourselves, which is why in such moments, we especially need to have a strong inner nurturer. A simple truth to keep in mind is that over time, those of us who allow our inner critic to run rampant are actually less productive in what we are critical about. And ultimately, that bleeds into our overall quality of life and the elevation of living well that we are able to reach. So number 8, just remember that it's okay to be critical on ourselves to a point, but it's often something that we've strengthened too much and it becomes too harsh. And what we should be focusing on is strengthening that inner nurturer within ourselves. So that's number 8. Number 9, practice liking more and wanting less. Quote, the root of wanting means lack. It's natural to like things that are pleasurable, such as a sweet dessert with friends. But issues arise as we move from liking to wanting, from enjoying a meal together to insisting on the last piece of pie. End quote. When we let our auto-wanting take control, we are pulled from the present. We are infusing our minds with a belief that we are not enough, or what we already have is not enough. This is draining physically and potentially financially. Instead, practice appreciating, window shopping, so to speak. Whenever you feel, quote, any sense of pressure, compulsion, or must-ness, end quote, take a breath, recenter yourself, and remind yourself that the advertisers are doing their job, but you can still appreciate the beauty, goodness, and awesomeness without funding their cause. This is where the skill of being content will help tremendously. As was shared in last week's episode, episode 244, contentment can be felt every day, all day, as contentment is not dependent upon external sources. And when we are able to be content, it becomes easier to like versus want, which is number 9. Practice liking more and wanting less. Number 10, healthy intimacy begins with healthy personal autonomy. Quote, paradoxically, in order to get the most out of we need to stay centered in me, end quote. Intimacy, as it appears in our lives, can be cultivated with mere acquaintances as well as a romantic partner of 50 years. As defined in the book, intimacy is, quote, to make familiar or known, end quote. And the knowledge of self and security within oneself is the foundation. Let me say that one more time. The knowledge of self and security within oneself is the foundation of these healthy, intimate relationships. Because when you are confident that you are able to take care of yourself, you can step forward to be engaged with others, knowing your limits, knowing your boundaries, and if necessary, knowing that if the limits or boundaries are not respected, you can step back and take care of yourself well. With the relationships you begin to build or relationships you are currently in, assess if they are able to do the following four things. First, enable you to fully express your thoughts and feelings. Two, you are able to ask for what you want. Three, you can trust your judgment if others disagree with you. And four, you can stand up to others. If you are unable or were unable to, in past relationships that no longer are part of your life, to do any of these four things, you may recognize you do not have full personal autonomy in that particular relationship. These may be relationships you either now recognize need to be stepped away from, as you now can pinpoint why you just don't feel right about them, or if it's only one of them that's the issue on the list, you have a specific focus now that you can bring up if you would want to improve the relationship and strengthen it. A quote from the book, "Much autonomy enables intimacy, and intimacy supports autonomy. Close and nurturing relationships help a person feel safe and worthy as an individual, which promotes a confident independence. In a positive cycle, autonomy and intimacy feed each other. Together, they make you more resilient." End quote. So moving forward, keep these abilities in mind, the ability to be able to stand up for yourself, to trust your judgment when people disagree with you, to ask for what you want, and to fully express your thoughts and feelings. You should be able to exercise all four of these in a healthy relationship, and the other person with you in the relationship, thus embodying this paradox shared in the quote. So number 10 is healthy intimacy begins with healthy personal autonomy. We often hear the word resilient uttered during times of strife or hardship, but the truth is, as Dr. Rick Hansen points out, strengthening the tool or skill of resilience can elevate the quality of our everyday lives in all of the good moments that we have as well. As is often discussed here on the podcast and on the blog, The Simply Luxurious Life, our mind is an amazing mechanism. And to understand how it works, have patience with the rewiring process if you are choosing to do so. Because when you do that, you can yield awesome outcomes for your life, enriching the journey and leading you where you truly want to go. Now, I'll provide the link to the book on the show notes and all the other links that I mentioned about previous episodes or podcasts at thesimplyluxuriouslife.com/podcast245. But now, let's get to this week's petit plaisir. This week's petit plaisir is a film I saw a couple weekends ago. So if you follow me on Instagram, you know what I was watching. It's called On the Basis of Sex. And it just came out over Christmas, the Christmas holiday, the end of this last year. And it stars Felicity Jones as Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Armie Hammer as her husband, Marty Ginsburg. Here is the trailer to give you a glimpse of what the film's about. And then I'll come back and share a few more interesting tidbits. I feel the fire begin to
rise. There are 178 laws that differentiate on the basis of sex.
Women can't work overtime.
We have to get credit cards in our husband's name.
We're not allowed to work
in mine. This is a
man. You think you can change the country? We should look to her generation. They're taking to the streets.
Protests are important, but changing the culture means nothing if the law doesn't change.
What did you say your name was?
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I want to be a lawyer. I want to represent clients in pursuit of justice.
So they're going to give you a corner office?
I wasn't what they were looking for. One said women are too emotional to be lawyers. Another told me a woman graduating top of her class must be a real ball buster. I worked hard. I did everything I was supposed to, and I excelled.
Martin Ginsburg will be signing all of our checks someday.
Get a smart girl with you. You married a star.
If the law differentiates on the basis of sex, then how will women and men ever become equals?
I don't read tax court cases.
Read this one.
The law assumes a caregiver has to be a woman.
This is sex-based discrimination against a man.
Poor guy.
We need to take this case.
This is not a case. This is a declaration of war.
It could topple the whole damn system of discrimination.
They think gender equality is a civil right.
What's at stake is the American family. Let's put this idea to bed once and for all.
You will lose, and when you do, you will set the woman's movement back 10 years.
You don't get to tell me when to quit. I know this case disrupted our lives.
And who's it for, if not for me? You cannot be.
Ready for this your whole life. So go in there and let the judges see the Ruth Ginsburg I know.
We're not asking you to change the country. That's already happened without any court's permission.
The word woman does not appear even once in the U.S. Constitution.
Nor does the word freedom, Your Honor.
I feel that trailer encapsulates very well what this film is about on the basis of sex. It is about a case titled Moritz versus the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. And it is about a man, a bachelor who never married, who was taking care of his mother who needed in-care or home assistance. And he asked for a tax write-off for the work that he was doing for his mother. And because he was a man, they would not consider it a tax write-off. So it's a very unique and interesting case. And it all is about tax law, which is what Marty Ginsburg's focus or specialty is. He is also a lawyer, or was also a lawyer. Now, who made this film? Who wrote this script, I think, is even more fascinating. The screenwriter was Daniel Stiepelman, and he is Ginsburg's nephew. And there were two goals he put in front of himself before he wrote this script. Number one, get the law right. Number two, get Marty Ginsburg right. The writer has spent time with Ruth and Marty during their relationship before Marty passed away 7 years ago from cancer. And he knew firsthand how integral his support was for supporting Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But on the flip side, with regards to Ruth Bader Ginsburg's support of Marty, they were a team effort. And they actually both co-chaired this case. So he knew tax law. She, with regards to discrimination, took on this case. And as we know, it changed the law with regards to gender-based discrimination. It set a new precedent when it came to gender and the law. Now, the beginning of the film, I won't give everything away, but we already know that she wins the case. But I think it's interesting, if you are not aware of gender and law in America, with regards to the number that they shared with you about the different laws that were still in the books, and some of them still are to this day, that discriminate on the basis of gender. She, in her class of 1956 in Harvard, was one of nine women in that class. And if you've seen the second trailer, when Sam Waterston, the dean of Harvard, stands up and he's welcoming the nine women that are in this particular class, 1956, he stands up at the dinner and he verbatim says, "Why are you taking a seat from a man who could have this seat instead of you?" Verbatim, and I completely butchered exactly how it was stated, that was what was said at the dinner. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg played a very hands-on role in this film. In fact, her daughter, Jane, who is shown in this film as a young girl, is now a law professor at Columbia University in Manhattan, and she approved the script as well. Now, when Marty Ginsburg was diagnosed with testicular cancer during his third year of law school, Ruth, as the movie depicts, did collect notes from his friends and typed up his essays as he dictated them. This is a process that began near midnight, and when he finished dictating around 2 a.m., she would then turn to her own coursework. Now, one thing that is different in the film than in real life, and I think this is just something just to be aware of, is that she never actually went to his classes, and in the film, they have her going to some of his classes. But I think for the visual purpose, people needed to understand that she was doing the gathering of the notes for him. She wasn't writing his work. He was doing what he could do at home, and she was just putting it into the format so that it would be turned in. And then with regards to the case, Moritz versus Commissioner of Internal Revenue, while the legal side of Moritz's case is accurate, as we just talked about, her nephew wanted to make sure that was completely on the nose in alignment with what actually happened. In the movie, Ruth actually flies out to Denver to meet the client, but she never actually met the client until the case was heard. It was Marty who actually made the first contact, and he did not do so face to face. According to Ginsburg herself, quote, "We met Charles E. Moritz for the first time in the fall of 1971, the night before the argument. He took us to dinner in Denver. He had to hire a babysitter for his mother," end quote. If you would like a source for all of this information and more, visit slate.com, which is where I picked that up. And you can go to the show notes and take a look at pictures of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Marty. He was a phenomenal cook as well, in which she talks about, if you've seen the documentary RBG, which, as one reader has brought to my attention, was nominated for an Oscar recently and highly, and was a previous petit plaisir this last summer after I watched it. Could not recommend it more highly. He was a wonderful cook. She was not. And it just the idea, they were a team. They were a team. They supported each other and they lifted each other both up. That as well is inspiring. You can find more information about On the Basis of Sex on the show notes, the simplyluxuriouslife.com/podcast245. I hope you've enjoyed this week's Petit Plaisir, where each week ideas are shared to make the everyday all the more enjoyable. Tune in at the end of each Monday's podcast, where I'll recommend a book, a film, or a recipe, anything that is a simple pleasure to satiate your sophisticated taste. I want to take a moment to share a quick mention from Instagram follower Nessa Black. She shared a picture of herself reading the Simply Luxurious Life's new book, Living the Simply Luxurious Life. And she pulled a few of the quotes that really spoke to her. She wrote, "I'm only 36 pages in and already she's touched on so many valuable topics that have grabbed hold of me. This section is especially relevant at this moment in my life. And it's about remaining curious." She pulled two quotes from this particular section. "Do not let your curiosity be squelched because it may not make sense to those around you or the community you live in. Creative living is a life where you routinely make your decisions out of curiosity instead of fear." I wanted to thank her for sharing that on Instagram, to share what she enjoyed. And if you too are enjoying the book or enjoy the book, feel free to either email me or share a review or where you got the book, or share on Instagram and I'll put it on my feed as well. This is definitely a book to take your time and read in whichever order you want, based on what you want to learn about, what you want to explore, what you want to strengthen in your life. So thank you, Nessa Black, for sharing what you're enjoying currently as you're reading Living the Simply Luxurious Life, Making Your Everydays Extraordinary, and Becoming Your Best Self. All right, wishing you a wonderful last few days of January, and I will see you in February, next Monday, that is. Bonne journée. Thank you for tuning in to the Simple Sophisticate podcast, where intelligent living is paired with signature style. For more ideas and inspiration throughout the week, visit the blog, thesimplyluxuriouslife.com, or pick up my new book, Living the Simply Luxurious Life, Making Your Everydays Extraordinary and Discovering Your Best Self. You can also pick up my first book, Choosing the Simply Luxurious Life, A Modern Woman's Guide, which is available now in paperback, ebook, and audio versions on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes, or wherever books are sold. To stay caught up on the most recent episodes of the podcast, blog posts, my new cooking show, and receive exclusive news as well as an extra dose of inspiration to jumpstart your weekend, subscribe to the Simply Luxurious Life's weekly newsletter, which arrives in your inbox each Friday to enjoy with a hot cup of tea or a morning cup of coffee. Until next Monday, I'm your host, Shannon Abels. Bonne journée.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.